everybody, and welcome to Lecture 10 in this History of America for the junior and senior high class with History at Our House. The title of today's lecture is Filling in the Big Picture Part 2, Christianity and the Calendar is the subtitle. And so what we are about at this time is this, thanks to Bria, we have this very good metaphor, which is that the story of this America-centric, interconnected, globalized world is the final chapter so far of a much longer story. And so in order to understand the events that are going to unfold in this final chapter, we have to have at least a summary awareness of the events from the preceding chapters. We don't have to study them in great detail, you know, we do that in other segments of the course. But at this stage, we at least need to remind ourselves, or at least orient ourselves, for those of us who don't know it yet, to this big picture, so to speak. Or another great word for that, which is a great another one of our great vocabulary words at this juncture, is the word context. Right? So the context is the sum of circumstances that surround an event. And also for us as learners, as students, it is the sum of items of knowledge that we need to have in order to understand that event. And so in this context that we are building, which we can represent by this timeline, let's go ahead and do that. I'll share my desktop again. Back to the desktop. In this context that we are building here for the study of American history, what we have seen is that we have a long, sad history of human beings living in a certain way. We don't know the details of it, and to a certain extent you're relying on my characterization of that story, but it is accurate, and the representation is correct, that all the cultures of the world are basically wrapped up in the same kind of story, where we have a small group of people that supports somebody in a position of power called a monarch, and everybody else has to bow down to him. And these people have the weapons and making sure that everybody acts in the right way. And at the same time, over here in another culture, we might have another monarch who's surrounded by the group of people that have the weapons. And everybody else is kind of has to do whatever the monarch wants. And the story is repeated over and over again. The monarch is surrounded by the group of people that supports him, including the warriors. And meanwhile, you have this painting which shows us kind of the fate of the other people as well. And so it's repeated. The story is the same throughout the history of the world. And so that's the importance of grasping that history goes back to 3000 BC, is that for nearly 5,000 years of recorded human history before America, sadly, the story is very much the same. And then along comes the United States. This country is created by the founding fathers, and they have a radically new idea as to how to do that. And the product is this country, which, and the world that we live in. This country that is preeminent was the word that we used to describe it. Among all the nations of the world, this country which dominates the world militarily, economically, and in terms of cultural influence. And so that makes sense if we're trying to look for and just kind of generally have an understanding, why is America so important? Why is it so disproportionately important in the world today? Well, guess what? America was the first country that ever really did things this way. So there's something unique. We don't necessarily understand it well, but there is something absolutely unique and special that has resulted in America gaining a place in the world that reflects that. So we're going to be studying that. That's part of what we are about in American history. So that full context, though, that we are filling in now also shows us something else. Here, I didn't have this nice painting on screen last time, but it's a nice landscape painting of ancient Athens. And so ancient Athens, where some of you may be familiar with the architecture, right, of the ancient world. This is called the Acropolis, or the Parthenon in particular, right? So that's the image that I'm going to use as a kind of symbol for that particular moment and time in history. And ancient Athens was the culture that originated the concept of democracy in about 508 BC. And alongside it, in a fascinating sort of way, in a parallel development, in 509 BC, the culture of Rome produced the first republic. So that's pretty amazing that those two things happened around the same time. And as far as we know, it's a pretty good representation of when things happened. So this is like a dual milestone, a dual anchor in history, which also sets the context for all of this. Right? So it allows us to see that the United States was not entirely the first to do certain positive things. In ancient history, there had been other societies that had overcome this problem of certain powerful groups supporting a monarch that would rule over everybody else. There had been other societies that had rebelled against that idea and produced something else, namely a democracy in Athens and a republic in Rome. And so this is also an important part of the context of American history, because when the United States was created by the founding fathers, they definitely looked back to this. This was what they were relying on in large part, this only other set of examples of people that didn't succumb to monarchy. This was a great, powerful example. These were very powerful examples to them, and the founding fathers used their knowledge of history of these examples in order to make the United States. It was one of the things that made them as successful as they were. One of the reasons why the United States has been so successful is it was built on a foundation of historical knowledge. And the founders saw what was good about Greece, what was good about Rome, and they said, okay, we're going to copy those things. But at the same time, they also looked back on Greece and Rome and they said, well, there were some things that were wrong. There were mistakes that were made, that were problems that those people had, and we should learn from those and do better. And they did, which is staggering. Which is amazing. And as a result, the United States is far more historically significant in the end than those ancient cultures. The outcome is on a whole different scale than those, right? It's on a global scale. All right, so here we are filling in the big picture. And now we need to proceed further. We're not quite there yet. The world is a complicated, interconnected place, and there's a dimension to culture, this complicated abstraction, this complicated idea, culture, that we haven't yet talked about. So, if we were to list, which I think is a pretty decent, comprehensive list, I'm going to take this out for the moment, okay? If we're going to list what are the main features or aspects or dimensions of a culture, I think this is a pretty decent list. And you can see that we've already done a pretty decent job of elaborating upon these different things. Right, so when we think about America as a culture, one of the attributes that characterizes that American culture is wealth. how rich the United States is has a great deal to do with the kind of culture that it is. Another aspect of American culture is military power. How powerful a country or a people or a nation is has a lot to do with shaping its culture, is a part of its culture. The type of government that a people have is another aspect of a culture. Whether they have a monarchy, whether they have a democracy or a republic or what have you, is going to be a big part of shaping a people's way of life. And then we have a variety of other features of varying degrees of significance. I would say that the types of art that you find in a culture tend to be very significant as well with regard to that culture. So nowadays, we would look at the main forms of culture as being music, movies, and television. But there are others, right? There's visual art, there's literature, there's sculpture, there's poetry, there's all those different types of art as well that are a part of the culture. And how, what types of art people partake in, what types they enjoy, what they turn to as part of their way of life is definitely going to be one of the features of who they are and how they live. And then we have types of food and cuisine. We've talked about that too, right? So we have McDonald's is part of American culture, like it or not, along with Burger King and all, and Denny's and all that other stuff. And then on the other hand, you know, there are a lot of cultures in the world that have different types of food and different types of cuisine, right? And then number six I've got listed down here is the language that people speak, right? So a big part of Americanism is the English language, spoken in a certain way, right? Not spoken in the same way as people speak it back in England. There was a break there. There was some kind of people in America decided to speak it differently for important reasons of culture. And so they speak it in a certain way. And meanwhile, people in Latin America speak Spanish or Portuguese. That's a big part of their culture. And as the same goes for pretty much everybody anywhere. And along with all of that, what we haven't yet enumerated as part of a culture, but which is definitely key and which everything we are doing revolves around, is the history of a people and the traditions that are linked to that history. Right? So the way of life of a people will reflect the history of that people. And then, finally, and this is what we're getting to today, religion as a dimension of culture. And this is going to be a really fascinating part of our story. Because in most parts of... Now, what do I mean by religion? Before we get into that, right? I had this on there already. I'm going to put this down for a second and just come back up to this. Go back to that in a minute, right? So by religion, I mean the idea or the belief that there is a supernatural dimension to existence. The idea that there's something beyond what you can see and what you can understand with your mind and that you can grasp by some mystical means and that this consists of something godly. This consists of either gods, more than one, or a single god, that sort of thing. So religion is a constant feature of human civilizations in this 5,000 years that we have to look at it. Now, today, religion has a really interesting place in the world. In modern America and in the modern Western world, meaning, you know, the European world, religion has changed place. Has changed places, I guess you could say, from where it used to be and has become much less central. In fact, has become peripheral, generally, in people's lives. In other words, the world used to be religion-centric. Cultures, most cultures in the world, including European culture, used to be religion-centric. And now are not. So in other words, it used to be that wealth had a lot to do with religion. The church was super wealthy. Anybody that served the church was super wealthy. Everybody else was pretty much poor. Military power used to be connected to religion, as we will see. If you were an emperor, if you were a king, you had to be a Christian king. You had to serve the Pope, or you had to fight against the Pope, or against other kings that have different beliefs. The type of government and the type of monarchy would be related to religion. All of the art that people made had to do with religion. This less so, right? This less so, but even nowadays, people's religious belief might affect the type of food that they eat. The type of language that people spoke was connected to their religion. The only people who were literate were in the church. The history and traditions of people were, everything was connected to religion. Life was this set of cultural connections and interconnections, and at the center of it all was religion. Bria, go ahead.
Wasn't there like a king in medieval ages that was like kicked out because he did something wrong with the Pope?
Yes, there was, and there were many of them. And that has to do with this connection, this level of connection in the culture to religion. Nowadays, if a president does something that the Pope doesn't like, what does that have anything to do with it? It doesn't matter. So it might matter to some people, right? To some people, but it's peripheral. In other words, it's not central. When people talk about what the president does, they're not referring mainly to religion. They're referring to other countries. They're referring to wealth. They're referring to power. They're referring to the rules of government. They're referring to all kinds of things, but they're not referring to religion. Some are, but again, that's peripheral. So we live in a strange time compared to the past, and this is going to be part of our context as we seek to understand this. We live in a time in which the connections to people's beliefs about the supernatural have been greatly reduced in their way of life. If you have a religious belief in modern life, that belief is usually disconnected from most other things, such as your job. If you want to be an engineer, or a lawyer, or a doctor, or an actor, or a computer programmer, or whatever, it usually does not have anything to do with religion. And whether or not somebody's going to hire you to do that work, or pay for your product, or whatever, is also usually not connected to religion. Whether or not you're going to buy a house or rent an apartment has nothing to do with your religion. Whether or not you're going to go to college, whether or not you'll be treated by a doctor, how you will be treated by the police, and in general, whether your rights are defended or not. All of these issues are disconnected from religion in modern America and in the modern world in general. And we refer to that disconnection as religious freedom. It's a very interesting way of referring to it. So what it means is you are free to have whatever beliefs you want. And we maintain a disconnect between those beliefs and everything else. Now, why that is a really profound feature of America. The idea of religious freedom is one of the defining features of American culture. If It is also something that has not typically existed in world history. Another unique and wonderful thing about America. And if you look around the world today and you think about those stories that you researched in the news, in particular what's going on in the Islamic world, where again we're talking about a religion, we see that that disconnect doesn't exist over there. In the Islamic world, life is still religion-centric. And this is a fundamental reason why there's a clash between these two cultures. It's not the particular religious belief. It's not the particular tenets or arguments about what's right and this and wrong. It's the fact that in one civilization, life is religion-centric, and the other one, America, is not. And the other one, America, is culturally influential and militarily powerful and rich and seems to be at the center of everything. That those two things don't go together. They create a profound conflict. And the result, for some people, is they cannot deal with that conflict any other way than to do this. So we have a subject here which is going to have a really profound impact on our study of the world. Part of what history must do is help us to understand the place of religion in the world that we live in and find out how it got to be that way. One thing that history does not do is tell us how we're supposed to feel about that. History does not choose sides when it comes to religious beliefs. So that's another thing that has become disconnected from religion in modern times. History is pursued in modern society as a secular subject. And History at Our House is a secular history program. So that means that I'm not going to pick sides. I'm going to try to present to you the facts to help you understand the world. Everybody here has their own personal experience of religion and religious beliefs. That probably is part of how you define what your family is and you personally, who you are, and what you think of some of these issues. That's absolutely fine. But we don't choose sides when we're studying history. Now that makes the fact of the calendar a very interesting challenge. Because the calendar that we use is connected to and cannot be disconnected from one particular religion. Remember what I said, modern life is quite disconnected from religion, but the modern calendar is based on an event that is the central event having to do with one particular religion. And that presents quite a challenge to people when they are trying to interpret history. So, what is the event? Well, the event is inherent in this terminology that we're going to be using. BC on the dates and AD in the dates, which I think most people here are already familiar with, but it is not uncommon for people to make certain mistakes with regard to those. So let's just bring this back here up onto our screen and just highlight this fact, because BC is obvious and easy. It means before Christ. AD is less obvious because it's not English. It's Latin, and it means Anno Domini. The Latin expression, does anybody know what the Latin expression Anno Domini means? Juliet, please.
It means in the year of our Lord.
In the year of our Lord, right. Okay, so we can go ahead and add that there. In the year, that's the Anno part, right? Domini. So, in Christianity, Jesus Christ is often referred to as the Lord. So, in the year of our Lord, refers to the fact that Jesus arrived, was born, promoted his teachings to the world, and people followed and created the religion of Christianity. So everything follows from the fact that he was there. The entire religion, evidently, is named after this individual. Christianity, the name comes from Christ. Okay, so the calendar that we have is based on the fact that Jesus was born. It was never really known and has never really been determined exactly when he was born. One of those difficult things for historians to try to figure out. And so, well, the calendar is kind of stuck in a certain place, and we're just going to use it. It is the calendar that people use. And so people say, in a basic sort of way, that Jesus was born, as of course you guys all know, right? The day to celebrate is the 25th of December and Christmas Day and in the year one. And then after that, everything is measured from there. Everything before that is denoted as, well, 1 BC, 1, 2 BC, and so on, keep on going, 3,000 years back, all the way to Menes Narmer. So this is where the calendar comes from. And, well, that's not always easy for people to deal with. Because, well, Christianity may be, in fact is, the most important religion in the history of Europe, and it is the most important religion in American history. But for the world, that's not the case. Most people in the history of the world have not been Christian. Most people living today are not Christian. So a lot of people look at this calendar that we have and they say, well, that's not fair. That's wrong. It's forcing everybody to use a calendar that really has to do with only one religion. And since there are so many other beliefs, and it seems kind of not right that one of them should be in the calendar and not others. So some people have said, well, the way to deal with that is to take this calendar here, and instead of writing BC and AD, we'll take the dates and we'll write them differently. We'll come up with a new way of writing them. So some of you will be familiar with this type of notation, where some people will say, well, the year 1492 is not the year 1492 AD, it's the year 1492 CE. 14, and by that, what they're saying is, before the Common Era, and Common Era. So some dates are before the Common Era, and some of them are in the Common Era. Well, what do you guys think of that? Is that a good way to say, well, okay, one belief, it's not really fair for one religion to have kind of a monopoly on the calendar, and therefore we'll take it and we'll change the dates. We'll take the same calendar, but we'll change it and we'll call it BCE and CE. What do you think? Keen?
As far as in a practical sense, there's a couple senses, but in a practical sense, it's just not particularly practical to change it at this point. It's been BC and AD for so long. But also, my personal problem with it, and some people agree with me, some people don't, but BCE and CE, it's a superficial change. It's placating. It's just saying, okay, we'll change it. It's not actually changing the calendar. I mean, whether you believe in Jesus and God or not, most people believe in Jesus because he was a real person, but whether you're Christian or not, the fact is, Jesus was born when he was born. And that's just a historical fact if you are a secular person. And if you're religious, it's a historical fact, and it also has lots of other meaning. So if you're secular, you can just say, well, you know what? This man was born, he was of incredible importance to the world, and so we mark the calendar here because of that. I don't see... This superficial change just bothers me personally. It seems like a band-aid, and it always, whenever people try to argue that, you know, oh yeah, BCE, CE should be that way, I always have the argument because, I don't know, I don't have a full philosophical, you know, picture for, as an argument, but I sort of laid out a few things, and that's how I feel about it.
All right. I think you're on the right track, Timothy.
Yeah, I sort of agree with Keen. Like, this change really isn't necessary. And, I mean, AD could be a little offensive to people who are not Christian, but BC is not, because we're pretty much 99% sure that there was an actual man named Jesus Christ and that he was born in the year 1 AD. So that's a fact. It's not saying... like, it's not BG before God or something like that. It's BC before Christ. And we know there was a man named Jesus Christ.
Okay, so you're getting there as well. I'm going to help you guys to kind of sort this out and explain why. History at Our House is a secular history program, but I absolutely insist on the use of BC and AD for the notation of history. So the first thing that I'm going to do with regard to this is I'm going to look at this alternative and explain why it is absolutely unacceptable. So this common era is the key notion involved in denoting events in modern times. Now, the thing is, nothing became common in the world in so-called 1 CE. There was no globalization. There was no common story among human beings. There was no unity. There was no interconnection. There was no world in which anything became common to anybody. Everybody was in separate parts of the world, in separate warring parts of the world, mostly unaware of each other in little archaic monarchies and terrible primitive societies. There's nothing ever happened at this point to bring the world and make the world have anything in common. So to say that there was a common era is really a terrible misrepresentation of anything that was going on in anything until... So here's where I get upset, because we do start to have a common era. But it was here. This is when we start to have a common era. If you want to make a calendar called the Common Era Calendar, it should start here. It should start when the world became this interconnected place where everybody's living in a common reference frame. So you could start it right here, and you could say, we are living in 522 Common Era. That would be the most sensible. If you wanted to create a common era calendar, well, we'd be living in 522 common era. So there was no common era. Everybody was completely separate in this entire period. And in fact, life turned out to be really horrible at this point. There was a dark age, and there were just terrible things going on at that point. Nobody had anything in common. So this term common era is a meaningless term. It's literally meaningless. It does not actually refer to any fact. Now, what's worse about it than that is that it tries to, in a superficial way, but it's not that superficial, it's worse than a meaningless fact. It is an attempt to erase a fact. And that is the opposite of history. Historians never erase facts. We face them no matter how uncomfortable they may be. And the fact of the matter is, the calendar is based on the life of Jesus. So, it doesn't matter whether you like that or not. What matters is there's a fact. And not only that, it is, as Keane said, an amazingly important fact. You cannot look at history and understand it AD without reference to Christianity. You cannot understand globalization. You cannot understand American history. You cannot understand anything that you see without referring back to the fact that Christianity gets its start with the life of Jesus Christ. None of it makes any sense without that fact. So, history deals in facts. Historians are not in the business of erasing facts. They are in the business of facing them. This notation is a disaster. It's not even a superficial, uncomfortable fact. It is an affront to the actual true nature of history, which is to face facts. So yes, History at Iowa is a secular history program, and that means that it's not based on any one particular religion, but that has nothing to do with the notation. The notation is what it is, and we use it because it reflects a fact and its importance to history. Now, it also is a fact that Christianity's role in civilization has radically changed over time. You can't appreciate that, and you can't know what that means without being in this framework. If you alternate and you go over here and you try to make sense of anything in history, you're putting an obstacle in your path of understanding. If you want to understand the world that we live in today, you absolutely have to have this reference frame. You have to measure the world that you live in as being 2014 years after the birth of Jesus. That matters a lot. The distance is enormous. And it is very impactful. To understand American history, you can't possibly understand why there is religious freedom in America until you study the context of what happened with Christianity in the history of its people until the Founding Fathers decided we have to change the way this works. If we want to have a properly ordered society of freedom, we're going to have to include in that formula freedom of religion and so on. None of that is understandable without reference to the origin of Christianity and the long story of Christianity, which is built into the calendar. So it's an anchor. It's a historical anchor like any other, and it is such an important one that it's right there in the calendar. There's no way around it. The only way around it would be if the society that we lived in changed so completely that people decided to measure things in a completely different way. It is the case that we live in a society where religion has a different role, a lesser role than it has in the past. But it is not the case that we live in a society where Christianity does not have a crucial, important historical presence. So the calendar is what it is. It is the right calendar. It is the calendar that makes the most sense for measuring all the events in the history of the world. There's no better choice. So we will use it. As it turns out, we do have a pretty good guess as to when Jesus was born, and this is also kind of a strange fact. About the best guess that we have is that Jesus was actually born 4 BC. So that is a very curious kind of historical fact. But again, historians, the religious traditions of the life of Jesus were not exact. They were not scientific history. They were people passing on stories. A lot of them, Jesus was a very obscure person in his time. And so a lot of the information that we have is poor quality information, historically speaking. But historians have worked really, really hard on this question because of the importance of Christianity. And the best that they've come up with is that Jesus was actually born 4 BC. So they've kind of moved the date over 4 years for his birth. But they could not change the calendar at the same time. So the calendar is still the way that it is. But we will look at why it is that we're in this strange kind of position here, because one of the things about the birth of Jesus and about the role of the story in history is here we are. If you look in the foreground of this painting, which we're going to use as part of our timeline, you see the nativity scene, right? The one that people associate with Christmas, right? With Jesus born in the hay and so on, right? But this painting is a very interesting painting because it shows us something about the world in which Jesus lived, the world as it was then, and the role of Christianity in the story, which we will get to tomorrow. And this is really crucial to understanding how our world was shaped. So this puzzle, I'm going to leave you with this kind of visual puzzle, which is we have the nativity scene in the front, we have the birth of Jesus, and we have it in the context of something else. And this raises all kinds of interesting questions and helps us to appreciate this puzzle that we have, which history's purpose is to help us solve this puzzle, which is the world that we live in is a certain way. In that world, Christianity has a certain place. Why? Why not another place? How did it come to be the particular way that it is? When we have Christianity in America, when we have Christmas, for instance, in America, we have a big, fat, jolly Santa Claus. We have lots of Christmas lights with lots of electricity. And we have chocolates and we have lots of presents. It's very commercial. It's very secular. That doesn't seem to have anything to do with, and a lot of people find it disturbing that it does not have anything to do with Christianity. But it does have to do with the way that our modern world works. How did it come to be that way? There's a fascinating story there and a set of puzzles which are a part of how we get to where we are and how we understand it. And then after that, it's up to you what you want to do with it. If you have a deep and important religious belief, well, you can respond to that in a certain way. If you don't, you can respond to it in another way. History doesn't choose sides in that particular regard. But history tells us where we are, what Christianity's place is in the world, and how did we get here. So tomorrow we'll look at this. We're getting very, very close to kind of finalizing this orientation and this orienting picture. The other thing that we're going to need is this. We've got this now. It's in our calendar. But the other thing that we're going to need, the one last thing that we're going to need before we get into the nitty-gritty of the story is this up here. So we'll deal with that. We'll fill in our big picture timeline, and then your job will be to be able to kind of walk through it, to be able to master that, to be able to express what it is that our world is like, what the features of it are and where they come from. And then you'll be ready to study its history. You'll be ready to ask the questions and have them answered. And off we go. All right, we'll get to this soon enough. Last thoughts for today? Questions? Comments? All right. Talk to you all tomorrow. Bye for now.
Bye, Mr. Powell.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.